The presenting sponsor of the Audible is Trader Joe's. And Bruce, obviously we want people to listen to our podcast, but I think we want them to listen to another podcast as well.
Yes, if you want to find out about the best grocery store in all of California, this is the podcast you need to listen to.
Bruce, they are the best grocery store in all of America. I don't know. I know you don't get out of California very often.
I don't.
Trader Joe's is everywhere. And Inside Trader Joe's is a five-part podcast series that takes you literally inside Trader Joe's. Go inside the TJ's tasting panel. Travel to wineries in Napa Valley and around the world to discover the next great Trader Joe's products. Discover why they wear those super fashionable Hawaiian shirts. You can get the podcast at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Audible. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman. Bruce, you spent a little bit of time this past weekend around some of the top high school and top college quarterbacks around the country, and I'm curious to get some of your thoughts from Elite 11.
Yeah, this year was not supposed to be anywhere near as good a crop of quarterbacks coming up as the class last year that had Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence and actually a bunch of really big physically mature kids. This group didn't have that. It was a lot of people thought it was one of the lesser classes in a while. There's still some good kids, but one thing I noticed was a lot of them were smaller guys. You know, Spencer Rattler, who is an Arizona kid who's committed to Oklahoma and looks like he's a really good fit for what Lincoln Riley does there. He's pretty tiny, just not just short. He was a little, I would say he's more along the lines physically of Kyler Murray. Now he's taller than Kyler Murray, but just in terms of like frame wise, you know, Baker Mayfield is short relative by QB standards, but he's a thicker guy. Rattler looked good. It's just you wonder how many, you know, if his body doesn't really continue to develop a lot, how much can they run him? Then there was another guy who I really liked, who's going to Florida State. Sam Howell, he's a North Carolina guy. Kind of reminded me of Chase Daniel. Probably maybe a better arm, but around 6 feet, 6'1", he looked good. And then there's two other guys who I think you'll hear a lot of. One is a more pro-style guy, and that's Graham Mertz from Kansas. He's committed to Wisconsin. He is the prototype size guy, big arm. From what I heard, Ohio State and Texas A&M may have a shot to flip him down the road. We'll see. And then the other one who was very impressive, and this is a good find by Sonny Cumbie and TCU, was Max Duggan, who's about 6'2". He's a four-sport athlete. He's actually from Iowa. Moves well. He checked off all the boxes. I thought he was a big-time kid, and I heard he's really solid to TCU, and I think you'll hear a lot about him. And so those were the ones who were a little more, I would say, along the lines of kind of revelation. And then you had Patrick Nix, his son Bo Nix, who's committed to Auburn. Just really good. I don't know if there's any wow factor, but he's really good. And then probably the biggest story guy of the group is Ryan Holinsky, who's the younger brother of the late Tyler Holinsky, the Washington State quarterback. Ryan's a big kid, very mature. Just people really like him and respond well to him. He's committed to South Carolina. I think that's a really good, really good get for Will Muschamp and the Gamecocks.
But it sounds like, you know, in this particular year, the quality or the star power of the college counselors maybe was as appealing as going and watching the high school kids.
No doubt. And I think, you know, there was, as you said, star power. You had both Alabama quarterbacks. I actually did a story for The Athletic on what they had told all the counselors and how they kind of handled themselves here, told the counselors and also the high schoolers. It was Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa. Both are good representatives of Alabama. And I'll say this, when you watch Tua throw the ball in person, even if you've seen him throw in person before, there's such a wow factor. The ball just explodes out of his hand. He's not the tallest. I mean, he's a thick lower body guy. Just gets a ton of force behind the ball and really looks unflappable in how he handles everything. And then we saw that quite honestly in the win over Georgia when he came off the bench. So you had those guys. You had the guy who I think will probably be the top senior quarterback in the NFL's eyes, and that's Jarrett Stidham. They did the Elite 11 guys did a kind of a mock pro day for all the quarterbacks, including the counselors. And Stidham just throws a very, very tight ball. He obviously moves well, has good feet, like him a lot. I thought, just from in this setting, I'm more sold on him as a pro prospect, quite honestly, than I am Drew Locke, the Missouri quarterback who was also there. Will Greer was also there from West Virginia. Trace McSorley from Penn State was there. Manny Wilkins from Arizona State was there. And the guy who really created the most wow was actually the guy who only showed up for one day later than everybody else. And that was from UCF, Mackenzie Milton. And he's the smallest guy. He's even smaller than McSorley. But when you watched him in the pro day, and there's a bunch of guys who work in the NFL and have worked in the NFL who are there, and his feet were just really quick and very dynamic. And the ball also, just he has a lot of juice in his arm. I was really impressed with the velocity that he could put on his throws. It was, I had always heard from people around UCF how smart he was and how he picked up the offense and how he kind of could trigger everything and process. And that's all great. But I think his physical tools in terms of that arm, especially, is really underrated. And I came away wowed by him, what I saw from him Saturday night there.
I want to follow up on that and also on the Jalen Tua thing, but just a quick tangent about how much can really be gleaned from watching a guy throw up close and seeing, like you said, the velocity or the arm strength. Because let me tell you something. Take a guess. This was in the last few years. The most impressive, just purely like velocity ball coming out of his arm, that I've seen in a practice, what quarterback that was?
Are we talking about the last 15 years? Or are we talking about the last 5 years?
This would have been in the last 5 years.
Okay.
Very highly regarded recruit who, well, I'll just say it. There's so many quarterbacks.
I would say it's probably Tua if it's a recruit in the last 5 years.
I have not seen Tua. So it's not like I've seen every quarterback of the last 5 years throw in person. So this isn't like an authoritative list. I'm just using this as an example of what can we really glean from this. It was Christian Hackenberg. I went to a Penn State practice. Yeah. And I was like, and this was after his freshman year when he had started as a freshman and, he assumed at that point he would progress. And I was like, okay, I see why he's such a Mr. Five-Star recruit. That's incredible. And, of course, we know that it only got worse from there. So, obviously, I guess the lesson is that's just one part of the picture.
Yeah, it's a big piece. I would say along the same line of the tangent, if you had told me instead of 5 years, 15 years, my two guys were both guys I saw at the Elite 11, neither as campers. One was actually working as a ball boy, which meant he was going to be a junior and not a senior in high school. And the other one was a counselor. And they were big, big guys with huge arms. One was Jamarcus Russell. He has the biggest arm I've ever seen of anybody. And the other one was Ryan Mallett, who was the high school junior. I mean, they could get a tremendous amount of velocity on the ball. And obviously neither one worked out in the NFL to match up that arm strength. So we'll see. I think the big piece of this is when you look at quarterbacks sometimes that put up a lot of numbers in college, the question is, and I guess Graham Harrell would be a great example. He was a great college quarterback. Kellen Moore, Boise State, a guy we both love, great college quarterback. You can do it on anticipation. You can do it on smarts. But if you just don't have enough horsepower for some of the NFL throws, that will be your undoing. You will only go so far. Now, having said that, there's a guy who had a little bit of a resurrection in Minnesota last year, who's not the tallest, who's a guy a lot of these quarterbacks wouldn't mind being compared to if they're not prototype size. And that's Case Keenum. He doesn't have Russell Wilson's kind of juice in his arm, but he has carved out a nice NFL career, so it can be done.
So in terms of Mackenzie Milton, and I saw the tweets, everybody that was there came away, kind of blown away. Now this guy, he was number two in the country behind Baker Mayfield in pass efficiency rating last season, so it's not like he came out of complete nowhere from a college standpoint. But he was not a four or five star Elite 11 type quarterback. He was a completely under the radar guy who was headed to Hawaii until Scott Frost got the UCF job and remembered him from Oregon and gave him a call. So if you're a Nebraska fan today, that's got to be pretty exciting to hear. Your new coach seems to have a pretty good eye for quarterbacks.
Yeah, and certainly knew, a fit and everything else. And remember, those Oregon guys were the ones who found Marcus Mariota when I think ESPN had him ranked as like the 139th best quarterback in that recruiting class. So you know, it bodes well. Now, having said that, there was like, I remember talking to Manny Wilkins there, who's had a nice career at Arizona State and really a remarkable kid in terms of just, you know, beyond just football, what he's about. And we were talking about his recruiting process, and he was living in the Bay Area. He's friends with Jared Goff, and his dream school was Oregon. And I think Oregon was about to come, you know, visit him, and he was going to throw for them. And then instead they got to see Morgan Mihalik, who is another guy a little bit similar to Mariota, just in this regard, where he hadn't played much, but he was in the pipeline of a good program. And I guess they like Mihalik, what they saw from him. They took a commitment from him right on the spot, never really got to see Manny Wilkins beyond that. And Morgan Mihalik really didn't end up doing anything for the Ducks. So it's obviously an inexact science, but yeah, if I'm a Nebraska fan, I'm pretty excited about my chances with Scott Frost running the show.
Okay, in terms of Jalen Hurts and Tua, because Saban has made them off limits to the media back home throughout this spring and off season, you know, this is one of the most watched, if not the most watched, quarterback competitions out there. And because they haven't talked about it, and because Saban's mostly played down questions he's gotten about it, everybody's gleaning any little thing they can. And so a few weeks ago, Tua gave a speech at, I believe, it was middle school, right? Not high school?
I think so, yeah.
And made a comment that caught everybody's attention, that he said flat out he was ready to transfer if he didn't play in that game. Jalen Hurts' father also made waves when he said that when he was asked by Matt Hayes if Jalen doesn't win the job, what happens? And he said he would become the most coveted free agent quarterback in college football history. You were in the room at this camp, thanks to your connections there, when the two of them spoke to the campers. What did we glean from that?
We gleaned that Jalen Hurts is way more mature than your average 19-year-old. It kind of blew me away that I realized, wait, he's still only 19. How he presents himself, he talked about how he basically was able to process not just his role, but he gets benched basically in that game, and his understudy goes in there and becomes the hero. And everybody saw it afterwards, how he had this huge smile on his face and said all the things you would hope. If you're a coach, your guy in that position would say, but it's easier said than done. And he goes, you know, I've always been raised, you know, he's the son of a coach. I'd always been raised to, you know, put the team first. That's bigger than me. And he said, Alabama, they sent him in the off season to an IMG summit for leadership. And he said his biggest takeaway, what he really got from that was, and as he put it, to lead, you have to be able to love. And, you know, it's like he was quick to make sure no one, you know, interpreted that in any which weird way, I guess, as how he wanted to kind of diffuse it. But he said it was really important for him to realize the biggest thing he could do was connect with his teammates and make them, you know, make them realize what he was about. And really what he was about was all about the team, making them better, being there for them. And as he's telling this, I happen to be sitting, Tua didn't know it, but I'm sitting like literally 4 feet behind him, and I'm watching him, and he's nodding his head in agreement, almost everything Jalen said for, you know, whatever, it was like this is a 3 or 4 minute answer. And then afterwards, Tua gets called up, and Tua, I think what I took from that, you know, is the kind of discourse that he had with the high school kids was really about how do you stay focused when all of a sudden you blow up. How do you stay grounded when you blow up and become a huge thing, like all of a sudden? And he handled that well. But I thought the answer that was actually maybe the most telling was Yogi Roth, who helps run the camp. He's a former USC assistant coach under Pete Carroll and now works for Pac-12 Network. And he brought up, he said, how do you just, you know, walk into a room as a quarterback and you're the young guy there and you're coming from the far west and you have such a diverse group of teammates? You may have a 25-year-old, you know, teammate who's married with 2 kids who's been on a mission. You may have a starting receiver who thinks they're the guy and, you know, has been there for four-year starter. And how do you handle it? He goes, this is the way it is for me. They grew up playing the same game I played in Hawaii when they were little kids, and it's the same game. And that's kind of our connection point. And what, you know, he kind of went into it a little further, and you just kind of think, okay, a lot of times, and this could be any of our listeners too, where let's say we golf or whatever, sometimes we're our own worst enemy because we make things harder than they are. We twist our minds into places they don't need to go. And this kid is not wired for that at all. He's the opposite. He is keeping it as simple as possible because that's just how he either approaches it or how he's fortunately to be wired not to get entangled in things like that. And so listening to him and just being around him a little bit for the weekend, that kind of kept on getting reinforced, was just kind of how unflappable he seems to be with that stuff, and just has like a little bit of a breezy aura about him. And you know, his younger brother, I want to just throw this in there, Leah, is in this high school quarterback class. He was there. He doesn't have anywhere near as big a reputation as Tua does. He is committed to Alabama. He's one of two kids who were there who were committed to Alabama. Bear Bryant's like great grandson, Paul Tyson, who's a bigger kid, also was there, and I had a chance to speak to him about things. But Leah is maybe an inch and a half shorter and physically looks like he's like 3 years younger when you look at his body, not just a class younger. But he has the same explosive, you know, throwing motion and delivery. And the thing you don't know is, does he have the same wiring? Does he have the same unflappable demeanor and approach and all that? Maybe he does. But, you know, very interesting situation. Obviously, it's going to play out over the next at least, you know, 3-6 months in Tuscaloosa.
So wait, what year is Tua's brother?
He is going to be a senior in high school. So both he and this kid who's like an offspring of the legendary Bear Bryant are both committed there.
Let's say either before this season or after this season, certainly after he gets his degree, Jalen Hurts transfers from Alabama. We could be looking at a situation the following year where the quarterback competition is between two brothers.
We could. My hunch is that Tua is pretty far ahead in his development, and I think his younger brother is probably a little more of a project in that regard.
Or he could be his backup. If Tua were to go down in a game, in comes his brother.
Yeah, he could be. Now, Mac Jones, to his, you know, in fairness, is also there. Yes. He was the other freshman, and I think they like him too. So, like, Alabama's, as much as they could have some attrition and their numbers could be down, I don't think anybody needs to worry about them replenishing the depth chart.
Back to the podcast in a second, but first, Bruce, let's talk about our favorite mattress, Lisa.
Stu, there's no way you can get a better night's sleep than if you get a Lisa mattress, so why wouldn't you?
Especially given that they're currently offering $160 off of a mattress at lisa.com/audible. It's the deepest discount they've ever offered. They also donate one mattress for every 10 sold and then one tree planted for every order received. That's 23,000 mattresses donated thus far. 11,000 plus 5-star reviews. Lisa Mattress is loved by 300,000 happy sleepers and counting. So again, you go to lisa.com/audible and you'll get $160 off, which is a fantastic deal on any mattress of your choosing. Again, lisa.com/audible. All right, so let's move to a different quarterback who's in the news this week. Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray gets taken 9th overall in the Major League Baseball draft by the Oakland A's. Frankly, a lot higher than I think most people had been hearing. I mean, I'm not by any means a close follower of the baseball draft, but you know, I'd seen the stories and the tweets about him, and I want to say as recently as a day or two before, it was, oh, he'll go somewhere between 30th and 50th. Well, he ends up going 9th, which is big money. And,
$4 million, right?
$4.7 million. I had to have somebody explain to me what that number even means, and I guess it's like a starting point in the negotiations, but it's, you know, he's now can reasonably expect at least that much. And yet, apparently both he and the A's are okay with him playing this coming football season before he begins his baseball career. It's a pretty fascinating situation. I got asked about it in the mailbag. There have been a lot of quarterbacks who, not a lot, but quite, you know, a good list of quarterbacks over the last two decades who got drafted, and in almost every case they left. One exception would be Russell Wilson, played a couple years in the minors while still in college in the summer. And then, I mean, really the first name that comes to my mind, I don't know about you, is Drew Henson, who I had to kind of look back and remember the details, but It's kind of crazy now. He signed with the Yankees out of high school and still played 3 years of college football.
Yeah, I mean, we all have our own, like, anecdotal. Like, the first name I actually thought of was John Elway, but I remembered, the first magazine story I ever did at ESPN was on Josh Booty. who was a high pick, actually played in the major leagues for a little bit, at one point had the World Series ring. I don't know if we can ever find that for Josh. If we could, that would be great. But he was the same high school class as Peyton Manning. A lot of people thought he was more talented than Peyton Manning, both of Louisiana kids, obviously, but on opposite ends of the state. And then he came back to play college football much later. And I think we see that from time to time. Like our friend Joel Klatt, not exactly in the same realm in terms of recruiting hype. He was a walk-on and ended up bouncing around, I think, for the Padres and the Rockies maybe. And then he ended up, you know, having a really productive record-setting career at CU as a much more mature guy. The ones who can juggle both at the same time are rare. And also, a lot of the times we see quarterbacks get drafted. Even you mentioned Russell Wilson. They're not guys who are drafted anywhere near this high and have the investment. Like, I remembered, God, I want to say it's Matt Holliday, who was Oklahoma State, was a really, really good high school quarterback prospect. And he went to play baseball, I think he's still playing. I don't know. I should know this. Has had a really productive career in the majors. And so there's a bunch of guys who fit that. It's just, I think in this case, what seems to be unique to me is, even if we see a run of shorter quarterbacks, Kyler's much smaller than Baker Mayfield and would be the smallest quarterback if he were to ever, you know, kind of go that route in the NFL. And I think you look, you know, physically, it looks like he is more, you know, go try to be Ricky Henderson, as Daniel Jeremiah had said the other day, is probably better suited than that. But I think that, you know, the A's and the Murray family, and his dad was a great athlete and great quarterback at A&M, must have had some kind of understanding. Okay, he's going to go. This is important to him. He spent all this time preparing. He loves football, and I think that's a big piece of this. He loves football. He wants to have his run at this. So I don't know if that just means they're going to give him 1 year at OU to be the starting quarterback and continue to physically mature and get that out of his system or what.
It sounds, you know, like that. It sounds like there's absolutely no possibility now that he would come back for his fifth season. It's kind of crazy when you think back to all the hype around this guy as a recruit. I remember, you know, this would have been, gosh, Charlie Strong, maybe even his first season there. You know, Kyler had been committed to A&M for a long time, and then at the 11th hour, he took a visit to Texas, and it became, you know, this showdown between the schools. Then he gets to A&M. He plays a little bit. He transfers. All of this, then he gets to OU. And there was a possibility Baker Mayfield obviously could have turned pro. He stays. Like, all this hype around him going back to his time as a recruit is all going to end up with, at most now, you know, one season as a starting college quarterback.
How good do you think he is? I mean, he was a record-setting quarterback at the highest level of Texas high school football. Baker he told me, he was like, he's the fastest guy on our team. He was the best athlete on our team. Everyone talks that he has pretty good arm, although you can remember times where it looked like he would dirt some throws and just seemed like he was kind of frenetic and almost frantic out there. What do you expect from him this year?
I have no idea. I mean, I think the running part, no question. You know, it'll bring a different dimension to the offense. And then I guess I would just say I have a lot of faith in Lincoln Riley as an offensive play caller to play to his strengths. But, like, what will that look like? How good a passer will... I mean, he's not going to be anywhere near, I would think, as efficient a passer as Baker Mayfield was. He's the most efficient passer in NCAA history. But I don't know. Maybe that offense will look a little bit more like Texas A&M with Manziel. You know, same principles, but the guy who can beat you with his legs. It'll be interesting to watch. I mean, by the end of the day, we just don't have much evidence or much tape at this point to know what to expect.
Yeah, very interesting opening weekend matchup. You're going to have Lane Kiffin, which is obviously going to bring in a ton of publicity just because it's Lane Kiffin, and his team at FAU last year was very good. But also, their starting quarterback could be Chris Robinson, who Oklahoma booted off their team.
That's right.
And he could be the starter against what we think will be Kyler Murray. I checked that spread because, like, that's a Fox game. I don't think our crew is going to do it, but it was a 21-point spread. I wonder if that'll kind of slide down before we get closer to kickoff.
So it looks like you've been looking at the early season schedule.
I have, Stu. I have a vested interest in this, you know. So as you know, we made a move, and I didn't have cable or internet for a while. And I just remember, like, we got our schedules or a glance at our schedule before they came out. And I was like looking at them like, I'm looking out on my phone so I can't see everything. And then when I saw the whole thing, I was like, all right, this is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, I'm excited about just seeing the games. It kind of becomes way more real. And you know, plus being out at the Elite 11 last week, being around football and football people, it's not far off now.
You were really off the grid there for a few days. Do you, let me ask you something. Do you know who's winning the NBA Finals?
I do. I went out for game two to see the game. I went to a bar with some buddies. I tell you what I don't know. I don't really know a ton about what the heck happened with the 76ers front office.
Oh, man, that was wild. That was a wild story.
Well, it'll be for another podcast.
Have you heard anything about an NFL team that may or may not have been invited to the White House? Did you get any wind of that?
I got wind of that. Yeah, I got online Tuesday when all this stuff was already blowing up. But
all right, I'm just giving you a hard time. Let's talk college football TV schedule. I love it. It kind of makes it feel a little bit more real when you start seeing those times and networks. So just to whet your appetite a little bit, first weekend. By the way, for years that Thursday night game was South Carolina. Not anymore. Do you know who's teeing this season up?
I don't.
Thursday, August 30th, 8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Northwestern at Purdue.
Okay, we want to see Jeff Brohm's offense. That actually could be a battle between the team that got former five-star Clemson quarterback Hunter Johnson and the team that thought they were going to get him.
That is the Hunter Johnson Bowl. That's absolutely correct.
From what I understand, he had Duke high on his radar as well because of David Cutcliffe. So there's a little layer to that.
That's a pretty, a conference game, that's a pretty interesting Thursday night game. But skipping ahead to Saturday, that game you just mentioned, FAU Oklahoma at noon Eastern, Maryland Texas also at noon Eastern.
Maryland Texas, that might be my game, by the way. I think our crew's doing that.
Your game, it's on FS1. Ole Miss, Texas Tech, Oregon State, Ohio State, those games are all first game in the first window of the day. Then at 3:30 Eastern, you got Auburn, Washington, which I think is the most important game of week one.
I think that's the best matchup of week one. I don't even think anything's close to that, to be honest.
Michigan, Notre Dame?
I don't think anything's close to Auburn, Washington.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the playoff ramifications on that one.
It's not just that, Stu. It's just like, let's say Michigan, whoever wins that game, yeah, I want to see how Shea Patterson looks, and I also want to see what ND's offense looks like with a new offensive line and new offensive line coach and everything. But like, I'm not sure I can take a ton from that. That would feel a little bit like Texas Notre Dame game a couple of years ago, where it was a fun game and everything, but I'm not sure what we could have taken from it. Whereas if Washington goes across country and beats a good Auburn team with Jared Stidham, I think that is a huge boost for the Pac-12 that desperately needs it. And I think that would validate the Huskies as a real playoff contender. If Auburn wins, I think the Pac-12 is really sent down even further tumble.
So I agree with you, but I think it's, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast in the past for all the complaints Pac-12 fans have with Larry Scott, and there's a new thing happened this week that might be a new reason to complain. We can get into that later. But at the end of the day, the networks don't value these Pac-12 teams. And this is a perfect example. We both agree, Auburn, Washington, game of the weekend. And yet ABC decided to put that one in the afternoon and put Alabama, Louisville, which should be a complete blowout, in the primetime window because it's Alabama. They'd rather have Alabama against Louisville than Auburn against Washington in that primetime slot.
Yeah, it's the defending national champs. That's the only part of it. I mean, I don't think Louisville is going to be that good. They do not have Lamar Jackson anymore. So I'm with you. To me, that's like, will I try to watch that game? If I can, sure. But to me, it's not even close. I mean, I wouldn't even put that in the top five games of the opening week.
Also in that 3:30 Eastern window, Tennessee, West Virginia in Charlotte on CBS. I think the Mountaineers should roll in that
much
one.
Much more interested in that game, by the way, than I am in the Louisville game.
Chip Kelly makes his debut against the Cincinnati Bearcats, 7 Eastern on ESPN. Michigan, Notre Dame, 7:30 Eastern on NBC. And like I said, Alabama, Louisville with the primetime window. Then you go to Sunday, because that is now a new, I think it's the third year we've done this. LSU Miami.
Good matchup.
Good matchup. 7:30 Eastern from Arlington. And then Monday night, Labor Day night. This is actually a pretty damn good game to be playing the first weekend of the season. Virginia Tech at Florida State.
Yeah, you have two teams that are kind of, obviously FSU is looking at its women's first game of the Willie Taggart era. You have a Virginia Tech team, from what I understand, that they're really going to be hurting in the secondary. They've already had two guys end up out for the year in one way or another. One guy left early. The other guy was big, tall JC cornerback who is going to miss the year with injury. And so we'll see what's going on. That is an interesting matchup. But I think you're also missing, and I'm surprised you're missing it, because you are our resident Stanford expert, and they have a really good game Friday night.
You're right. I skipped from Thursday to Saturday. That is a good Friday night game. San Diego State comes to Stanford. San Diego State beat them last year.
That's actually a better game, I think, than the Thursday night game, to be honest. It's more compelling to me.
Yeah. Because no, it is. I mean, both of those teams should be better than Northwestern or Purdue.
You have Bryce Love, who is a true Heisman guy and you know, got off to a crazy year last year. Now we want to see, you know, here's the third running back for the Aztecs in a row. They went from Pumphrey to Rashad Penny, and now they think Juwan Washington is just as special. So again, this is another one, quite honestly, that if Stanford loses, that's a gut punch to the Pac-12 again.
So the upshot of all that is, in terms of opening, how as far as opening weekends go, you don't have the, you know, full-on headliner like Alabama, Florida State last year.
I disagree.
You think Auburn, Washington is that?
I do. Yeah, I think you're selling Washington short, and I think you're selling Jared Stidham short.
I'm not even saying. Well, I guess I'm not saying it from a football perspective. There's no question. It's a very important game. But at the end of the day, you're a TV guy. What would the TV rating for that game be?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know exactly how it plays out with the rest of the stuff chalked in that 3:30 Eastern window. I think both of those schools are seen as regional, whereas Alabama's definitely not regional. Auburn is.
Like the Alabama-Louisville rating will be twice that.
Well, it's also, you know, sometimes too, a lot of times, this is how things are positioned. If there's nothing else around Alabama-Louisville or not much around it, it's not a crowded window. Yeah, the numbers are going to go.
Well, actually, I'll take that back. Michigan-Notre Dame is in that window. Michigan-Notre Dame will be the highest-rated game of the weekend.
Two huge fan bases, right? Yeah.
And so that's my point. You know, we've had...
But is that really how you want to judge what you think is a great matchup? I would just rather go...
I'm not talking great matchups. I'm talking interest level. Like, remember 2 years ago, there was that Saturday, the opening Saturday that everybody said was the greatest opening Saturday of all time. It had USC Alabama, which was a blowout, but you didn't know it would be going into it. It had USC Alabama. It had LSU Wisconsin. I'm blanking on what all the games were that day, but it was just an absolutely loaded slate of glamorous matchups. Last year, Alabama Florida State was like number two versus number three or something like that. I don't think you have that kind of like, everybody's going to watch this. You know, stop what you're doing. Everybody's going to watch this. Michigan Notre Dame would come the closest. However, the point I was trying to make, I think from Thursday through Monday, that's a loaded opening weekend.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like you rarely get much. Like last year's Thursday night game, much to my chagrin, because it was opposite our Oklahoma State-Tulsa game, Indiana put on a really good effort and gave Ohio State all it could handle. And that turned out to be good, but rarely is a Thursday night game too much. Like I remember a couple of years ago, probably like 5 years ago now, it was the Kenny Hill game after Johnny leaves, where people are expecting a lot from South Carolina, and A&M just lights them up. You get like an SEC interest game, but it hadn't been, you know, I always felt like that was more like a middleweight fight compared to the rest of the stuff. And I think that's kind of what we got this time, too.
Here's a little bit of a refresher. This was Saturday, September 3rd, 2016. And I remember people looking at the schedule a year or two ahead and saying, like, wow, Oklahoma-Houston, LSU-Wisconsin, UCLA at Texas A&M, UNC versus Georgia, Alabama versus USC, Clemson. I almost forgot this. Clemson-Auburn was opposite that Alabama-USC game. And then on Sunday, Notre Dame-Texas. So, and Monday, Labor Day, was Florida State-Ole Miss. Remember that?
I do remember that, yeah.
Okay, now I want to turn your attention to a very intriguing discovery I made about week two. I hadn't made this connection until I saw the schedule. I knew that Clemson A&M was that day and that that would probably be the headliner game. And ESPN put that in prime time. High noon, my friend. High noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central. Arizona coach Kevin Sumlin returns to the city to face the school that he once coached, Houston, only a couple hours away from the place where he was coaching the last several years at Texas A&M. You've got Khalil Tate going against Ed Oliver, first game of the day. That's a very, very under-the-radar game. Would you agree?
I would, and I think what you're doing here is you're trying to make the bosses at The Athletic open up the purse strings to let you go cover it. Am I not mistaken? I'll tell you
here's
what.
Here's how I'm going to sell it.
First of all, I am
the boss, so I don't have to sell it to anybody. But
ooh, listen to you putting
Max
it out
Wilson
on the table.
And I have already made our plans. Ready? Arizona-Houston at noon. Well, okay, let's use local time. 11 a.m., Arizona-Houston. That game will end around 2:30 or 3. Get in the car. Drive to College Station. Clemson against Texas A&M, 6 o'clock.
I can entice you even further. I can get the two of you some coupons for the Chick-fil-A in I think it's Friendswood, Texas, which is not too far from the University of Houston, if you guys would like. How about that?
So you're talking about Tony Levine's Chick-fil-A?
Yes, I am.
Well, okay, so yes, thank you very much. We'll take your free Chick-fil-A, but I think Andy Staples is listening to this right now, beating his head against the wall, because obviously, if you're going to make that trip, you're going to get barbecue on the way.
Yeah, well, I'll let you guys know.
This is going to be blasphemous. I can't remember the name of the place, but you remember the really big, I think the last game I covered at A&M, Johnny Manziel against Alabama the year after he beat them.
I remember that.
Every national media member was at this game.
Yes.
Andy drove like 45 minutes out of the way at some ungodly hour in the morning to be first in line, and he brought to the press box this big hunk of brisket from people listening to this now right now who know the place are just like mad at me because I don't know the name of it.
I'm going to tell you before we trudge through the end of the mailbag.
You're going to tell me the name of it?
Yes.
All right. By the way, the thing I mentioned earlier, just a couple other highlights from week two as long as we're here. I mentioned that Arizona-Houston game. UCLA at Oklahoma is on Fox at noon Eastern. Skip ahead to 3:30. You've got Colorado-Nebraska. I think that'll be pretty interesting. It's a rivalry renewed. What's the CBS? There is no CBS. Oh, yeah. Georgia-South Carolina is the CBS game. Iowa State, Iowa on Fox.
By the way, Georgia-South Carolina, really good matchup, I think. I would say it's probably one of the five best matchups of the SEC schedule,
or at least for the first half of the year. If you were in their shoes, I can't say with 100% certainty, but I'm pretty sure CBS gets first pick of the SEC every single week. They chose that game over Clemson-Texas A&M.
They chose that game over, I'm sorry, say that again?
CBS chose Georgia South Carolina over Clemson Texas A&M.
Yeah, that surprised me a little just because you have Clemson there. Yeah. But I don't know.
I think because it's Georgia was in the championship game last year and it's a conference game. It's a familiar matchup. Speaking of SEC and CBS, by the way, some news this week. New sideline reporter.
I know Allie's moving on. She had a great little run there for CBS.
I think she was very good at that. I'm not that familiar with Jamie Erdahl, who's taking her place, but she's done a lot of stuff at the NCAA tournament, so we wish her luck as she joins the Brad Nessler, Gary Danielson, CBS, SEC team. Primetime that night, this is again week two. You've got a good one, actually. USC Stanford.
Yes, that's a
Fox,
big one. That's a Fox game.
Fox has got all the games that day. And Penn State-Pitt is the ABC primetime game. And then a little late night, Pac-12 after dark action, my friend. Herm Edwards and the ASU Sun Devils welcome Mark D'Antonio's Michigan State Spartans.
Yeah, a little friendly rivalry game. Brian Lewerke, who is an Arizona kid, gets to go up against Manny Wilkins and I think they're buddies. So
okay, before we get to the mailbag real quick, I mentioned it earlier, I alluded to it. What do you think about the Pac-12 voluntarily saying we're not going to send any 5-7 teams to bowl games.
Is that from them feeling like we're not going to send somebody into an ambush where we're going to have our 5-7 mediocre team and give us one more loss in bowl season?
No, it has nothing to do with that.
Okay. What do you think it has to do with?
From what I can gather, it's, well, they sold it as, you know, some noble, you know, basic, like if all of the conferences got together and agreed no more 5-7 teams, I think we'd all be absolutely thrilled with that. I think it's embarrassing when a 5-7 team goes to a bowl game. So they sold it, Larry Scott's statement sold it as that, like, well, we just don't, you know, we want to honor the integrity of bowl games and you should have to win 6 games. That's not that. It was brought up by Pac-12 ADs, which means it has to do with money. And it's this. If you are 5-7 team going to a bowl game, you're probably getting shipped to a game nowhere near where you're located on the West Coast. You're going to have to buy a certain number of tickets. No fans are going to go. I think they look at that as basically a loss leader. I mean, you would get revenue for the conference, but you wouldn't do anything for your own school. And then also, they don't want to pay their coaches the bonuses, right? They get a bonus for going to a bowl game that they didn't.
Yeah, not good.
John Wilner, by the way, who covers Pac-12 better than anybody, also brought up that a lot of times you're 5-7, you just fired your coach, you got an early signing date. So there's reasons to do it, but I still think that you're denying a group of kids and a group of coaches a chance to go play in a game that if they were in literally any other conference, they would get to do. Also, they would have, remember, the teams that get to go as 5-7 got there because of a high APR. So you're even saying, like, thanks for your great work in the classroom, but no.
Doesn't everybody in the Pac-12 have a high APR, though?
I don't know.
That's a rhetorical question.
I haven't looked through the data.
But I do have some vital information to pass along.
Okay.
So in your Andy Staples story, this legendary epic barbecue place in question, it is Snow's in Lexington, Texas.
That's absolutely right.
And it is only open on Saturdays, and it opens at 8 a.m. And if you think Andy Staples is in the 713 or anywhere near there, you're going to have to probably go at like 6 a.m. to box his 261-pound body generously out of the front of the line.
So I take it then there's no chance you could actually stop by Snow's on the way to the A&M game because they'll be all out of meat by then.
Of course they would. I mean, what are you, crazy? They probably are all out of meat like 2 hours before that would even start.
Oh, they'll be out of meat by 10 in the morning.
Yeah.
11 in the morning. Earlier if Andy's there. Back to the podcast in a second, but first, Bruce, Father's Day is coming up. It's just around the corner. And we know our listeners are trying to find the perfect gift for Father's Day, and you and I lately have been sampling the absolute perfect gift for any guy who likes to grill.
Yeah, what better way than get the best quality meats? Do I know that we grilled the other day and had some burgers from Omaha Steaks, and they were such an upgrade from what we normally get. I was very happy with this.
Yeah, we are making our way through this enormous, enormous box of meat that I'm going to tell you about in a second. We cooked the steaks first. Last weekend, we had, just like you, coincidentally, had the burgers, and we are absolutely loving it. So why Omaha Steaks? Well, first of all, convenience. They deliver them hand-trimmed, flash-frozen, and vacuum-sealed meats directly to your door in an Omaha Steaks cooler. Variety: pork, poultry, veal, lamb, bison, seafood, vegetables. Quality: all the highest quality cuts with a one-of-a-kind flavor. And customization. Omaha Steaks even gives you the option to customize cuts for your dad's grilling needs, find recipes, wine pairings, etc. So here's the deal, Bruce. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving a limited time offer to our listeners for Father's Day at 78% off, which is an amazing deal. You go to omahasteaks.com and you type Audible in the search bar, and here's what you get. Ready?
Go.
2 tender filet mignons, 2 top sirloins, 4 chicken fried steaks, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 all-beef Omaha Steak burgers, 4 gourmet jumbo franks, 12 ounces of all-beef meatballs, 1 pound of steakhouse fries, 4 caramel apple tartlets, 1 Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus 4 more grill-ready Omaha Steak burgers free with your purchase. Again, it's limited time, only $49.99 when you go to omahasteaks.com, type Audible in the search bar, and add Father's Day package to your cart. Don't wait. The offer ends soon. Go to omahasteaks.com and type Audible in the search bar. What do you say we get to the mailbag?
Let's do it.
Okay, as always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. Really enjoyed this first one from Johnny Shi. He says, guys, love the Audible, as always. I've been considering how fired coaches who would be rehired can be categorized. So three categories, Bruce. One, anytime they're ready. Two, once they're rehabilitated. Three, never, they had their one shot. So for anytime they're ready, I would list someone like Chip Kelly. For rehabilitated, my example is Bobby Petrino. And then hopefully, under never, I would have Art Briles. All right, so you get the setup here. You get the parameters.
Mm-hmm.
All right, he gave us four names he wants us to classify. Ready?
Yep.
Jim Mora.
I would say...
He doesn't really have to rehabilitate
anything. Doesn't really. I think the challenge with Jim is, so my understanding is he may end up doing TV for ESPN for a year. And then what's next? I just don't know if the jobs he could get, being in his mid to late 50s, would be jobs he would take.
So in that case, maybe he's in the never category.
Yeah, the problem with never, I like Johnny's question, the problem with the never thing is he's not, like, to me, Art Briles is toxic for a very specific reason. And I wouldn't want to taint somebody else in the same way. Like,
maybe
that,
there needs to be a fourth Dave category. Bliss. Maybe what he needs is like one that's, you know what? I'm gonna go ahead and separate, okay? There's now four categories.
How about we name the third category Full Nut, which is a combination of Fulmer and Nut.
And those are the guys who don't have to rehabilitate. What I was going to suggest is they had their one shot, or they had their shot, would be somebody like Mora. And then, like, never would be somebody like Briles.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Next up.
No, what did you say? What did you say about Jim Mora? Did you agree with me, or do you?
Yeah, I would put him in the never category. Okay. I put him in the had his one shot category.
I would put Les Miles in the same category because of age.
Yeah, age and, like, I mean, at this point, he's trying to be an actor. Like, he's not going to suddenly get a call. Hey, you want to be a college football coach again?
No.
Okay, this is an interesting one. Todd Graham.
I'm going to say Todd Graham anytime they're ready. I think, I don't know what job this is. Like, if Seth Luttrell has a big year and leaves North Texas, I could see Todd Graham getting something like that. I just don't know how many places are going to be clamoring for Todd Graham.
Yeah, so I would say anytime they're ready, if he's ready for a lower profile job than the one he just got fired from. But I agree. I mean, it's not like he's unhirable. You know, a lot of ASU fans didn't think they should have fired him in the first place. So I don't put that in the category of Mora and Les Miles. And finally, a controversial one, Rich Rod.
I think Rich Rod needs whatever legal matter to be sorted out publicly so people know what they're getting. I mean, he did a really good job once he got to Arizona, and I think they probably would have been pretty good if he had got this year, but his persona is not great.
So he would be in the rehabilitated category.
Yes, that's my take on it.
Okay. We agreed on all of them.
Okay.
Next up, Mark, who is a Badgers fan. As a Wisconsin fan, I wanted to rip my hair out most of the games I watched last year when Alex Hornibrook would be bad for a couple quarters with bad interceptions and wildly inaccurate throws, and then he would heat up in the two-minute drill in the pressure moments. Do you think Alex can be a top-tier college quarterback this year, and what is the ceiling for the Badgers? I would love to see someone other than Ohio State win the Big Ten, even if it's Penn State or Michigan State, but please, Wisconsin, just for once.
I'm going to say the ceiling for the Badgers is to be in the mix for the national title and go to the playoff. They have the best offensive line in college football. They have one of the best offensive players to run behind it in Jonathan Taylor. Some pretty athletic receivers, some studs on defense. They're really well coached. I think they're a playoff team. But that is under the guise that a very inconsistent quarterback. If Alex Hornibrook plays like he did against Miami, I think they can actually win the national title. If he plays like they did against Ohio State, I think they'll lose to whoever they face in the Big Ten title game.
Wisconsin could make the playoff, could win the Big Ten and make the playoff. Wisconsin cannot win the national title. They're not talented enough. They're not.
I disagree.
They are not one of those 12 or 13 programs that recruit the 4 and the 5-star kids and the top 10 classes, and that and thus can get into a playoff. Like, they could win the Big Ten. They could get in the playoff. But once they're in the playoff, they are not going to beat. They're not going to win consecutive games against, say, Alabama and Clemson.
Who has a better offensive line than Wisconsin?
I can't say I've studied offensive lines around the country, but usually pretty good, so I'm going to say them.
So they have as good an offensive line, if not better, than anybody. They have arguably the best running back in college football. Now, defensively, they have some good players. They probably don't have enough of them on the level of Clemson and Alabama. But I think if Alex Hornibrook, like I said, if he plays like he did against Miami, 4 touchdowns, no picks, almost completed 70% of his passes. And it's not like Miami doesn't have big-time athletes. I mean, they have a really good trio of linebackers. That defensive line was very good. They have a bunch of guys in the secondary who will play in the NFL. Manny Diaz is really good. Alex Hornibrook lit them up on the road. I mean, that was at the Orange Bowl. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a Miami. That's as Miami as the Miami's ever going to get at this point.
I don't think Alex Hornibrook is as bad as people are making it seem.
He's inconsistent.
Yeah. But I'm looking at his stats. So in the Big Ten championship game against Ohio State, and this is what I'm saying. When they make the playoff, you got to beat 2 straight teams with talent like Ohio State's. He was 19 of 40 for 229 yards, no touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. Against Michigan, another talented team, although not a great team last year. And this is probably more a case of they just didn't need him to win the game. 9 of 19 for 143 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. Now, Jonathan Taylor is a stud. Look, I have Wisconsin, I think, 4th or 5th in my top 25. I think they're really good. And this is not even specific to Wisconsin. I fully believe that in the playoff era, the pool of teams that can actually get in the playoff, win 2 games, and be the national champion is very small. And it's all the teams, Alabama, Georgia, USC, Ohio State, that recruit the best players in the country.
Wisconsin's more talented than USC. I'm sorry, they are right now.
They may be this year, but in general, USC. All right, well, let me ask you this. Who was the last college football program to win a national championship that was not a quote-unquote blue blood?
I'd have to look at a list. I mean, I'm going to go way back and say it was BYU, but I'm sure there was more that would fit in the category. It wasn't a blue blood.
I think it was probably a little bit after that. I think Georgia Tech won a national championship, or at least a share of a national championship. Colorado, this was in the early 90s. But this was also when you just voted on the thing. You know, since they've gone to an actual system with a championship game and now with 2 rounds of a playoff, I mean, just look at the list. It's all, you know, just pull
it up. When was the last time you saw Wisconsin play in person?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. Might have been when Russell Wilson was there.
They are very big, and they are more athletic than I think people give them credit for. You need to see them in person.
Do you think that this Wisconsin team is considerably more talented than the Michigan State team that went to the playoff a couple years ago?
I do, because that offensive line had some, you know, one really good player in Jack Conklin. You know, one of the Allens was this, you know, the anchor of the line. They were good. I think this group is better. I think this group has a much better running back. You know, I don't look at I think this team is better than that Michigan State team.
I actually agree. I think the best Wisconsin team of this whole 2-decade, you know, run of sustained success. Man, we should have on, you know, we just announced Jesse Temple's joining us to cover Wisconsin. We should have him on to have this debate. I think the best Wisconsin team was probably the one with Russell Wilson. Wait, was J.J. Watt on that team, or has he already gone?
I'd have to honestly look.
Bielema had 2 great teams back-to-back. The 2010 team that lost to TCU in the Rose Bowl, and that was definitely J.J. Watt. But I want to say that I think you'd have to say the next year's was a better team because Russell Wilson was there. Anyway, this should be on paper the best team Wisconsin has had since those teams. But those teams didn't play for the national championship. Here's the list of schools that have won the national championship since the start of the BCS in 1998. Tennessee, Florida State, Oklahoma, Miami, Ohio State, LSU and USC, USC, Texas, Florida, LSU, Florida, Alabama, Auburn, Alabama, Alabama, Florida State, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, Alabama. What do those teams have in common?
They're all in Power 5 conferences.
They are all the teams that every year on Rivals and 247 are ranked near
that
at or near the top of the recruiting rankings.
When Miami was putting that team together, nobody was ranking. Even if they had rankings, a lot of those guys were not those guys.
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't even think those sites existed then. But at that point, Miami had won several national championships and was known as a place that turns out NFL players. I don't think they were... I mean, when you talk about Wisconsin, Michigan State, the model is, I mean, blue collar, so many of their best players are former walk-ons. Now, at this point, Wisconsin fans are furious with me and think I'm bashing the program. I am not. I think they're a great program that will field a great team this year. But even if they go 13-0, win the Big Ten, 13-0, go to the playoff, they will not be able to win two straight games against the Alabama, Clemson's, whoever else might make the playoff.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, I'm going to give you a list of teams, Stanford, TCU, certainly Michigan State, Virginia Tech, I feel like I should add a few more teams to that, but those, do you think those teams can ever win a national title?
Of the ones you said, I don't want to say ever, but of the ones you said and with their current coaches, Stanford would be the only one I might give a shot to because they do recruit. I mean, last year, not this most recent class, but the year before, I think they had the number one quarterback, the number one offensive line, the number one and two offensive tackles. Like, they can get those guys. They just don't, you know, have the unlimited pool that everybody else does. Everybody else you mentioned is teams that get with coaches that get the absolute most.
Yeah, I think my thing here is I think sometimes, by and large, what you're saying is true, but I don't think there is, you can't, it's not an absolute. You know, Jonathan Taylor was a 3-star recruit. He should have been at least a high 4-star recruit. You know, Joe Thomas, this is the quintessential Wisconsin offensive lineman, the 18th ranked offensive tackle in the country. There's only one guy who was ranked ahead of him who actually started one game as a tackle in the NFL. I mean, it is a very inexact science to go down the road and say, are the percentages against him? Yes. But, I mean, if you actually watch this team, and this speaks to talent and development and evaluation, they can play with anybody. I really believe it.
I think they can play with anybody on any given week. Again, I think they could get into the semifinals and beat somebody. I don't think they can turn around the next week and then do it again. Here, I'm just looking up real quickly. So Wisconsin this year is built on these past four recruiting classes, and here's where they were ranked. 2015, 41st.
Oh, so you don't have to go to the list. They haven't had a class. I did this for my story on Scott Frost in Nebraska. They haven't had a class ranked above 30 since like 2001 when they basically started doing these.
So in those classes are going to be some guys who were criminally underrated and some other guys who, you know, I mean, they turned J.J. Watt from a walk-on into the best defensive end in the NFL. So the guys they will do that with. But on the whole, you are asking a lot for that group of players over the course of 4 years to beat, say, Alabama, who is number one every year in that time, or LSU, or Florida State, or Ohio. Well, Ohio State's in their own conference, or Georgia.
I've seen them beat LSU. I saw them beat Les Miles' LSU team. What was it? 2 years ago?
Yes, but that was the team that got Les Miles fired. I'm saying maybe I'm being misunderstood here. I'm not saying like any of those 15 teams would beat Wisconsin. I mean, Wisconsin beats teams like that in the SEC Big Ten bowl games all the time. It's those programs, and then you're playing them in the playoff. You're getting them at their absolute best. Not only did they sign great classes, but they developed them, and they have a good quarterback, and everything's come together. And this is LSU or Florida State or whoever at their absolute best.
Hey, by the way, so
taking your cast of blue collar guys and beating those two teams back to back, not going to happen.
You know what? One school that you left that came within basically a last second of winning a national title that would fit into a similar category was Oregon. They almost won a national title.
You are correct. Oregon is the closest in this era,
and they are not a blue blood
that has ever come to making me completely wrong on what I did.
And there was nothing fluky about them almost winning a national title.
Agreed. There was nothing fluky about them almost winning a national title. They had a fantastic quarterback. The only thing I would say is
that team didn't really have a fantastic quarterback.
2010.
That wasn't
Marcus. You're talking about 2010?
I'm talking about Auburn. That wasn't Marcus.
That was Darren Thomas.
Right. Not a fantastic quarterback.
In the annals of college football history, I believe one day people will look back at the 2010 season as one of the strangest in recent memory, because the two teams that ended up playing for the national championship who absolutely earned it, who were undefeated, barely produced any NFL players.
Right, but the team that they lost to had, which I would maintain, and you will come around to at some point, had the best player in our lifetimes in college football. They came up against Superman.
Correct. So that guy was so good that he took a team that on the whole was nowhere near as talented as other teams that have won national championships and led them in the national championship, and they beat an Oregon team. Oregon, this is the personification of that Chip Kelly Oregon team. Like, that team was just so ahead of the curve with that offense that they were able to come within a last-second field goal winning national championship game with Darren Thomas as the quarterback, LaMichael James as the running back, who was a fantastic college running back but never did anything in the NFL. Their top receiver, remember this? Jeff Mayle.
Yeah, good, really good player. He played in the NFL.
So yes, these guys were the ultimate overachievers, and they came very close. But again, that was also, there was one game. If you went undefeated, you were almost definitely going to be voted into the BCS title game, and you win that one game. Now it's,
could you do me a favor?
Get into the playoff and win two games.
Did you look and see who were 3-4 that year?
Well, TCU, I think it was TCU and Wisconsin. Because they played in a great road.
So there you go. If that was the case, I feel you don't have those. None of those are blue bloods.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm saying that was a year where all of the blue bloods stubbed their toe or were not like that. Okay, 2010. That was the first really bad year Texas had under Mack Brown. That was Lane Kiffin's first season at USC. Ohio State, I believe they had a really good season, but Wisconsin beat them head-to-head, and then went to the Rose Bowl over them. Alabama, that was Saban's only team since this run began that was not really in the mix. They lost three games. So it took this unbelievable confluence of events where all of the Blue Bloods had issues, and Auburn, Oregon, TCU especially with Andy Dalton, had these like dream seasons. You could write a book about it.
But there's also, look, the year Miami dominated, they had the best team and probably ever. You know, you look at the other teams that were in the mix there, they weren't blue bloods either.
By the way, another team that came very close to breaking this mold, Virginia Tech, with Michael Vick.
Yeah, again, you have a superhuman player that leads the way, but yes.
Yes.
Let's move on. Brian.
Yes, we spent a long time on that one.
I know. Brian Tregesser. I'm sorry, Brian, if I mispronounced it. Stu did his top 25 head coaching rankings. Where would Clay Helton land if you guys had to extend it past 25? Okay,
it's
Stu.
It's the perennial Clay Helton question. The guy won the Rose Bowl 2 years ago, won the Pac-12 championship last year, and I can't say he was even in consideration.
Yes, he is 27-10 all time and 20-5. He's the rare interim coach who only went 5-4. And yet ended up getting the job, although a couple of those losses came after he had got the job.
I think I said this in the article, either in the article or in the mailbag afterward, or maybe on the podcast last. At some point I said that in the common thing about evaluating those coaches, the guys who tend to stand out are the guys who have taken their programs to another level than what they have historically been. It's harder to do that, obviously, at a program like that. So I think the only way Clay Helton would be high on that list is if you won a national championship, because that's what's expected of USC.
If you did a top 40 coaches list, is he on it?
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be on the top 40 list.
Really?
But the top 20, because at some point you're going to start getting pretty far down. You don't think he'd be in the top 40?
Honestly, I like him a lot. I don't know if I'd have him in the top 40. Because remember, I had probably like four or five disagreements with guys you had. Mm-hmm. And those different disagreements, I would all have those guys ahead of Clay Helton. So now I'm at 30.
Right. I'll help you out here. I'm going to pull up a list of every coach in the country. And I guess to answer this question, we just got to find 15 guys who weren't in my list who you would have ahead of Clay Helton. All right. So let me just pull this up. And I'm just going to start rattling off coaches who were not on the list.
You just want me to say yes or no?
Yeah. That's easier than like trying to rack your brain right now for 15 names.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Ready?
Yep.
Jason Candle from Toledo.
Yes.
Okay. Brian Harsin.
Yes.
Jeff Brom.
Absolutely.
Mike Norvell.
Maybe.
Let's just do that as a no then.
Okay.
Craig Bohl.
Yes.
Paul Johnson.
Yes.
Wow, I think you're right. Clay Helton's not going to make the top 40.
Let me, and
Jacob Ullman is fuming right now. Okay, that's five. Ready?
Let me walk you back on names, and I'll just start rattling them off, and I'll tell you. Like, you went through that. I'm just talking power five guys. Jeff Brom, you said yes. Matt Campbell was on my list. He wasn't on yours.
Justin
Fuente, absolutely. Brian Kelly, absolutely. Dana Holgorsen, absolutely. Dave Clawson,
now,
yes.
Now, okay, hold on.
You wouldn't have Dave Clawson ahead of him?
Dave Clawson's done a pretty remarkable job at Wake Forest. Now, the one that you said that gave me pause was Justin Fuente. What has Justin Fuente done in 2 years at Virginia
Tech? Memphis was god awful before he made them good. That was the only reason why I hesitated on Mike Norvell, because he took over for Justin Fuente.
All right, so it's clear that he would not make your top 40. So what would Clay Helton have to do?
By the way, I haven't even mentioned, I would put Matt Rhule ahead of him. I would put Bronco Mendenhall ahead of him.
Kirk Ferentz?
Oh, yes.
What would he have to do to make your top 40?
To make my top 40, he would have to get USC into the playoff and not get blown out.
So if USC goes 11-2 this year and makes the Pac-12 championship game but loses, he still would not be one of your 40 best coaches in the country.
If USC goes to the Pac-12.
11-2. They're 11-1. They win their division, and they lose in the Pac-12 championship game to Washington.
Washington.
Okay, so now his three-year record is, I don't know. You it would be three straight 10 or more win seasons with the Rose Bowl and two Pac-12 championship games. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I doubt it.
That is a high standard.
It is a high standard, but I'm sorry. You know, first of all, that is a weak division they're in right now. It is a weak division.
I think the only reason I disagree with you is because you're not really taking into account what a dumpster fire that program was before he took over.
I'm going to give you the most profound thing anybody I know in coaching has ever told me about USC. And I'm sorry, we can bleep this. You have to bleep it up to not do really, really, really well there.
Well, a couple of the coaches recently have really bleeped it up.
No, Stu, you know, some of what was happening was they were coming out of sanctions. They don't have sanctions anymore.
No, it's true. It's true. Again, he's not my top 25.
I think he would be somewhere
between 26 and 40.
When they were on sanctions.
All right, we have one more question we need to get to. This has been a fascinating mailbag section. This one's for you. You know more about this guy, from Brian Benby. Okay. You guys, a few weeks back, did a segment talking about grad transfers. A name that not a lot of people are mentioning is quarterback Drew Brown, formerly of Hawaii, now with Oklahoma State. He put up decent numbers in his 2 years as a starter, 27.85 passing, 18 TDs, and 8 INTs last year. With limited talent around him at Hawaii, what are realistic expectations for Oklahoma State fans?
I think they're to maybe win 9 games. You know, when I look at them, they have a really good stable of running backs led by Justice Hill. They lost 3 stud receivers, but they still have some good ones. So now, in regard to, and by the way, new defensive coordinator Jim Knowles is coming in from Duke. I don't know if that's an upgrade. I know the Duke guys think highly of him, but then this is a really tough conference to be a DC in, even without Baker Mayfield around. So now, on Drew Brown, The thing I heard from him from the Hawaii guys, incredibly hard worker who loves football, no issues, very average arm strength, but really smart. I think he will be a decent fit there. I don't think because they have good talent around him, assuming he's the guy, and if he's as sharp as everybody who has worked with him says, I think he's a solid stopgap for them.
Gotcha. Well, I think we've gone over that hour mark that we usually try to keep it under. We appreciate you.
I think
we could
have had a separate podcast on the Wisconsin question alone.
I bet you we're going to end up talking about that again. That's a pretty fascinating topic. As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com, and we will see you next time.
If you enjoy our podcast and you haven't subscribed yet, what are you waiting for? Subscribe to The Audible on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a 5-star review while you're there. We'd like to thank our presenting sponsor for 2018, Trader Joe's. We'd also like to thank our producer, Nick Fink. Our theme song is Dangerous by Kevin and the Octaves. You can download their music on iTunes or Spotify. You can subscribe to my college football website, The All-American, by going to theathletic.com/theaudible, where you get a 25% discount and a 7-day free trial. Follow Bruce at Bruce Feldman CFB on Twitter. You can follow me at SL Mandel. See you next time. We'll talk about